Welcome to the Art and Science of Complex Sales. You've joined us in the Coaching Quarter. This podcast is dedicated to elevating the sales profession. Our listeners range from first-time salespeople to seasoned sales leaders and driven CEOs. They all come to learn from the best in the business as we interview top sales transformation specialists, go-to-market leaders, revenue thought leaders, and more with only one question on our minds: how we get better together. This 12-episode quarter brought to you by Membrane.com will start to hone in on a key element in performance: sales coaching. Each of our guests speaks to this a bit differently and brings their own unique take, but all cover the topic, how to execute, and the exponential impact it makes. So let's start shining bright and get kicked off with today's guest. It's time to bring the energy. Kelly Riggs knows how to do that well. Founder, president, and chief sales officer of The Business Locker Room, Kelly has spent the last 18 years of his life dedicated to teaching and coaching others how to compete and win in sales and leadership. A national top salesperson, an author, an owner of four businesses, and a man that has an incredible success as a consultant and a coach, he's a shining light in the world of sales. His more recent podcast, the Sales Untraining Podcast, is a must listen. We have Kelly today for the Art and Science of Complex Sales, so let's get rolling with him and have some fun. Kelly Riggs, welcome to the Art and Science of Complex Sales. How the heck are you?
Man, I'm doing fantastic, and this is like a bucket list for me to be worthy to be with Paul Fuller on the Art and Science of Complex Sales. Hang on, I'm checking that one off.
You are so full of it, but that's awesome.
No, I'm absolutely serious, man. What an honor. I thank you for the invitation. Great to be here.
Oh, man, that made my day. It absolutely my day. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, yeah. Hey, thank you for joining us in the coaching quarter. So this is a specific quarter that we're dedicating. I think we're going to have between 14 and 18 episodes specifically on leadership and sales coaching and how we're driving that through. And that's something that you know a little bit about, huh?
I hope so. As a young sales guy, I did very well in sales, and I was exhibit A of the common problem in selling. They had an open management position, and I was the top sales guy. So they said, "Hey, would you like to be a sales manager?" And I said, "Absolutely." You know, my ego and, you know, career progression. You're familiar with all those things and how that works and how it's just terrible in the workplace. But their training was pretty spectacular for new sales managers. It kind of went like this: good luck. That was it. That's all. That's all I got. So I found out very rapidly how terrible I was as a sales leader, beginning with hiring, by the way. I mean, I didn't know how to hire people. And I mean, I just really was a dumpster fire when it came to hiring. So those things led me to really try to figure out how to be good at this thing called sales management. And boy, what a journey.
Well, tell me, you used a term there, very specific. I'm like, I get done deep on the terms, and so you use sales management, but I'm going to also create, so sales management, sales leadership, sales coaching. I want to go into all those different terms, what they are, sure, how to do them, how you do them. We usually have people define sales, but I'm not going to go there with you today. I'd like to dive into those terms. Let's dive into sales management, and then let's go into the leadership aspects of that.
Well, it's really interesting. If I go all the way back to college, I took, as any business major will, you'll take management 101. You know, it's either in your second semester or maybe your third, and you go buy a textbook, Paul. It's about 3 inches thick, and it's divided into four pieces. And they tell you, they don't teach you how to manage, by the way. They just tell you what it is. And management is defined as planning, big section on planning, organizing, leading, and controlling. And controlling is not like controlling people. It's control systems, budgets, and processes, and all those kinds of things. So what we learn is that leadership is a subset of the management function. I mean, you manage processes and functions and so forth, but leadership directly relates to people. And if people work for you, you're a leader, whether you like it or not. The only question is, are you any good at it? So if you're a sales manager, you could be a team of one and maybe just be the CRM guru for all I know. But the reality is when it comes to management with people, you become a leader. And once you become a leader, then you're responsible for developing and growing people. What I say in short order is transforming potential into performance. That's what leadership is. It's the art and science of getting things done through other people. And since the key phrase is other people, then developing those people is critical.
Getting things done through other people.
Yes.
So that's a very specific definition. So can there be leadership without action or without achievement?
Well, I mean, if you want to get into nuance, I suspect that you probably could. I typically, because this, the management teams and executives that I work with, I mean, they're action oriented. They need to do things, accomplish things, get things done. And it's nice to talk theoretically about, you know, leadership being about being a visionary and being authentic and being transformational, which would include doing things, I suspect, or being inspirational. I think those are characteristics of leaders. You know, in order to be effective and to be able to influence people, which is the purest definition of leadership, I think those things are important, sure. But when it all gets down to where the rubber meets the road, my sense is we pay managers, we pay leaders to get results. And, you know, if you disagree with that, we'll try not getting some results for a while and see how that works out for you. But I think that's where you really make the distinction. Leaders, despite all of the academic theoretical concepts, I mean, you get paid to do things, to get things done.
Yeah, I've always said I didn't get an MBA. I got a GSD. Get shit done. Absolutely. I mean, well, because when it comes, that's why I love your definition. And I don't want, you know, we don't have to talk theoretically about it, but like just rubber meets the road. If we're not moving forward, we're staying still, and which is generally moving backwards.
For sure.
You know, so how do you integrate? So you have sales management, leadership. Now, let's start at the basics and just define what is this idea of coaching to you? How does that roll into this?
Well, my understanding of coaching, I would tell you, is very much informed by my experiences as an athlete. I, you know, played high school sports. I played D1 college sports. Okay, to be completely transparent, I was on a team. All right,
but hey, I was too. Yeah, no, I was on a team for a subset of years. It was good.
Yeah. I mean, I got a letter, you know, I was on the sidelines and I played some, but I figured out pretty quickly. I was out of my league, but all of my work in training and coaching and so forth is informed by that training is, these are subsets of leadership. This is what leaders do. If I'm transforming potential into performance, if I'm getting things done through people, then I have to train and develop them. Well, training is the transfer of knowledge about a new skill, something I don't know. I'm training you on something you don't know how to do or you don't understand. Coaching, to me, is refinement of those skills. It's getting better and better at those individual skills. For example, I played wide receiver in college, you know, and they would teach you, you know, as a young athlete, how to run routes and get open. And, you know, you practice catching the ball and all that. But when the further you got up the ladder into college, I mean, you better know the basics or you're not there. But now they're trying to really accent what you learn, enhance your abilities. There's a lot of on-field, real-time coaching, whether it's if you're in individual drills like just the wide receivers, or you're working 7-on-7 offense versus defense, or you're working team. Your coach, your individual coach, is observing your actions and saying, hey, you know, you didn't read that right, or you're making your break too early, or you're not, you know, creating enough window for your quarterback to throw to. How do we impact that? Well, I know the skills, but I'm trying to get a lot better at those skills. And that requires practice, observation, and further input to improve. To me, that's what coaching is.
So can you, and I think this is the first time I've ever asked this question. Maybe, I don't know. Can you tell me, so we have a model, and I love athletics as a model. I love athletics as a model for a lot of different reasons. But we have this model of coaching, and that consistently walking side by side with them. Have you seen that in business at a really, really high level?
Coaching?
Yeah. Like, so that consistently walking with, like, that we have this model in athletics and teams and building teams. Have you seen that same in-depth necessary, let's make people better in business?
No. And in fact, I'll tell you, Paul, the higher you go up the corporate ladder, the worse it gets. CEOs assume that all of the executive team, the C-suite people, know their jobs, know how to do what they're doing. And I don't disagree with that, but I don't think it prevents the CEO from being able to, you know, further develop their skills. If he or she's not doing it themselves, certainly using outside people. But let's drop below that. Let's drop to middle management. Most of the time, if you've gone up two or three levels into middle management or upper management, the assumption is you're really great at what you do and you know what you're doing and you don't need coaching. My experience is nothing could be further from the truth. Typically, people get promoted because they're great at getting things done. They create results. They make things happen. They are hardwired to be efficient, so they can put 20 plates in the air at the same time, and they're amazing. And we look at them and go, wow, would you make a great leader or what? And the answer typically is no, because it's all about me managing myself, doing all these things. And they're great at it, but most super doers, when they become leaders, they're just trying to do more of the same, rinse and repeat. They're not coaching. They're not developing. They're not listening. They're not mentoring. They're not coming alongside because nobody's prepared them for the role. But let's take them up one more level. Someone who's not a leader, but a leader of leaders. In other words, you're a leader, but you have leaders reporting to you. Very, very, very rarely do you see people using the kind of come alongside, help you grow and develop kinds of approach to developing those people, because there's an assumption. You got here because you're good at being a leader. The fact of the matter is you probably more than likely got there because you're great at getting things done. And because you're a leader getting things done, guess what? You're typically the one doing it. You're stepping in front of your people, or you're telling them what to do. We like to describe that scenario as you're a self-limiting team of one. You just have a bunch of assistants working for you. You're not really leading them.
A self-limiting team of one. I like that. So relate that to you. You told a story at the very beginning, right? Mm-hmm. You go from, okay, I think I know how to sell, I'm doing all right, to, oh man, I am now in leadership and I am, the self-limiting belief of one. Like, I think as we grow through, I think one of the things that we forget in our corporate life as we go through the business is that feeling of being that doer and moving into that leader for the first time. And I don't think this is a general statement, but prepare for that. So
no,
take us, how did you take yourself through that? And then how do you help take others through that?
Well, I was Exhibit A. I got promoted and the assumption was our top sales guy should be a great sales leader. And I was lucky in some way, Paul. I had a couple of really foundational skills that I had picked up along the way from a good sales leader that I had had in the past. So I had some idea of some things that I needed to do well, but in other areas, I realized how terrible I was. And I fell in the same trap that everybody did. If somebody wasn't performing well, hey, that's why they've got me, because I'm the best. And so I would step in front and, you know, close deals or do things for people. And I very rapidly figured out that was not effective and it was creating problems. So I went on a journey. Yeah, the same journey I went on in sales, I figured out this is a set of skills I don't have. I just wasn't willing to be mediocre at it or to be ineffective at it. So I started reading everything I could find. I started, you know, going to seminars and seeking out mentors and all of those kinds of things. And over the course of many years, developed a lot of thoughts and ideas that I've since developed into the approach that I teach others. And what we teach others is there's a quote by a guy by the name of David Maister, who is one of the top 50 thinkers of the 20th century in terms of management and leadership. And he said, everything worthy of the word, he used the word management, is done one-on-one. Everything else is window dressing. And the first book I wrote was called One-on-One Management, What Every Great Manager Knows That You Don't. I subscribe to that philosophy. Leadership is about having a ratio of 1 to 5, 6, 7 people, and you develop them one-on-one by getting inside of what makes them tick, what skill gaps they have, you know, defining their potential and their career path and helping them reach it. My objective is to make everybody better in their role. And then, frankly, I'm trying to train them and coach them and help them get to the point where they take my job. Mm-hmm. Because if I've got a half a dozen people who are good enough to take my job, you can imagine what the results look like overall. And that's my approach to training leaders is, look, your role is to develop people one-on-one to the level that you've got amazing talent around you. You need to hire people smarter than you are, more effective than you are. And even if you're hyper great at what you do, that you're the talent executor. You're trying to assemble a team of people that can crush it. And if you can do that, I can tell you, you will never have a problem getting a management job. Not ever. Because great leaders, according to the data, are exceptionally rare.
Well, let me ask you this question, because this is something that is based on your description of that. Well, it's hard to answer. So as you dive in and you start to, you described how you dive into the books and you're not willing to be average at it, and you're not willing to, you know, so you're going to dive in, you're going to teach yourself, you're going to learn it. Do you have to go through that journey to be a really good? I mean, the assumption that a lot of people make is that you have to go through that journey. You have to do it yourself or you're not going to do it. Or can you create programmatic structures that actually incent people to become and teach and help them grow? Does that question even make any sense?
Yeah, it does. I think either way, it's a journey, right? I mean, it may be a one that's projected on you from the outside that, hey, here's the things that you're going to do and learn and so forth, and we're going to provide those resources. For most people, unfortunately, in today's environment, my experience is most people are waiting to be taught. They're waiting for the company to do something for me. I was just unwilling. And I tell people, you don't have to wait for corporate to make this decision. If you want to be a great leader, leadership is simply a set of skills to learn. And anybody can learn them. The question is, two questions. Do you have the desire and the discipline to learn and practice those skills until you're good at them? And number two, are you willing to develop your emotional intelligence as well? Because again, it's the art and science. The science is the skills, Paul, but the art is emotional intelligence. It's the ability to connect and work with people. And the really good news for me is that you can actually impact your EQ. Thank goodness, because my EQ was probably about as low as you would find on the face of the planet. I mean, it was zero.
I'd have people that argue with me that mine's negative. So,
yeah. Well, that emotional intelligence, yeah, I mean, you can know the skills, but if your EQ is really poor, I mean, if you lack self-awareness, if you lack empathy, you're not going to be a good coach. And coaching is an intrinsic part of being a great leader. So you could learn the skills, but you've got to have a feel for people. But again, unlike your IQ, which is pretty much fixed at birth, your EQ, you can actually improve. And that was great news for guys like me.
So when do you get into an organization and as you know, the business locker room, and you're working with leaders, and like how do you help them develop not just individuals, but programmatic leadership as a programmatic and systematic ethic within the organization, and coaching as a programmatic and systematic ethic? I mean, are there tips and tricks that you use to do that?
Yes. Herein lies the angst that I have with this whole process. Training and coaching is really not what people want. What people want is behavior change. You know, you can give people, what's the old saying? You can lead people to water, but you can't make them drink. So you can take them to that arena where they learn the skills and they understand how they work and how they're supposed to work. But actually getting people to change is a monumental undertaking. Most people don't like change, don't want to change. Most people, even despite the fact that they would like to change, it's too hard. It requires too much discipline, too much hardship. And so you go into organizations and the programmatic piece is, yes, here is the process of creating accountability in the workforce. Here's the process of creating effective one-on-one conversation communication so that you're providing feedback and getting input and counter mentoring each other so that you both grow. We get into the day-to-day tasks and activities, but no matter how well you expose them to that, if I'm not their direct manager, and not because it's me, you know, I'm anything special, just because if I'm the one teaching, I would have to be the one working them through the process. If I'm not in that process, walking alongside them, behavior change is really hard. Right? I mean, the science supports it, and everything we know about that is pretty consistent, that people have to want to change, desire to change, have the willingness to endure the challenges with change. And you have to have somebody come alongside coach. That's a pretty hard proposition corporately to bring in somebody from the outside, because they're going to say, well, that individual's boss should be doing that. I agree with that, except they don't know how. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's kind of circular in its reasoning, but yeah, I'm not a 30,000 foot view guy when it comes to leadership. You know, my sort of challenge with standard leadership training many times is it's too generic. You know, you need to learn to be your authentic self. You've got to be transformational. You've got to be inspirational in your approach. You've got to learn to get out front and forge a direction and create a vision. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. The only problem is I go to work on Monday, I'd have no idea what to do differently. And so my approach is to give people practical, tactical, disciplined, process-driven approaches and how to become a better leader, more effective on Monday. Changing their behavior, that's a task.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'll use a, I mean, it's habits, right? It's mm-hmm. like
absolutely.
I'm undertaking this 75-day challenge. I'm a fair bit of the way through it, but changing habits suck. Why do you do it?
It's so hard.
It is so hard. But so how do you make the most impact then corporately? Is it working one-on-one with the leader of leaders and having them change their habits, the ones that are most ingrained and the most successful in them that are probably the barrier that are stopping them from going to the next level? Mm-hmm. Or is it working directly and coaching at the lower levels, or do you have to have a combined approach? I mean, and I know I'm asking some generalized questions, but this is all about how do I help people organizationally take that next step to move their sales coaching forward and actually do it, actually enact it, not just play it.
Right. Well, when it comes to creating high performance sales teams or transforming your sales team to create what I call disproportionate results. I mean, we're not just good. I mean, we crush it, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
There's three really significant pieces of that. First off, you have to have unique talent. And so mm-hmm. oftentimes we really fail when it comes to the talent side of things. You've got to get the right people in the right seats, as Jim Collins said, but it's even deeper than that. They've got to have the right competencies and the right discipline and motivation, all those things. So that's one piece. The second piece is, you have to have focused leadership that understands how to coach, how to train, how to develop, how to create a pathway for people's improvement. They've got to be focused on that and not, budgets and CRM and meetings and all that. Necessary pieces, sure, but that's not what you hired them to do. You didn't hire them to be a CRM jockey. You hired them to develop a team of salespeople. Got to have focused, trained, developed sales leaders. And then finally, you have to have bulletproof processes. Sales planning, sales process, all the things that go into approaching the sale correctly and following through and doing all of the stuff that are important. Leave any of those three major buckets out, you have a problem. So short answer to your question, I really don't see any value in getting involved in training a sales team if I cannot impact the leader as well, because he or she is going to be the one that comes alongside and reinforces everything. And so sometimes as I work with sales teams and the sales leader, it becomes very, very apparent we don't have the right talent, right? That, mm-hmm. And that's tough, because here's a scenario for you. You're the sales VP of a $50 million company and you guys hit your number this year, right? You hit your number 100.1%, but you hit your number. But we go look deeper at your sales team, and actually it was about five people who drug you across the finish line, and you've got a couple of mediocre people and three people that are failing. But we don't say to the sales leader, you failed, because obviously they didn't. They made their number. But yet, how much do we leave on the table with half the sales team being ineffective? Right. And how much better could we be? And so we tend to say, well, we can just keep going. I think the really savvy sales leader understands that my lowest performer needs to be a high B plus performer. I mean, they need to be a good cultural fit, obviously, but they need to be producers. If you've got three or four people on a 10 person team that are underperforming, I can't look at you as a real success. Even if you made 100% of plan, that's going to be controversial, but many times it's the five salespeople that have driven you across the line despite you. And yet leaders of leaders, the person managing that VP sales, he is, I think, pretty unwilling to be critical. And I'm not suggesting calling them on the carpet or all that. It's just that deep dive look into, you know, how did we get here? And is it because of your leadership? Or is it because you had five really great salespeople and we have five not doing as well as they should? That's an interesting construct.
That's a really hard equation.
Yeah, like, it's
a really hard equation, especially when you try and do it internally, because you get a lot of it. That's where your EQ comes in, right? Because there's so much posturing. There's so much all of those things across all organizations. And this is just human nature, right? That is a really, really tough equation.
Well, I tell you, as an aside, just adding on to that, if that sales leader came to me and I'm the CEO or general manager or whatever and said, you know, we made our number and I'm glad that we did, but frankly, there's plenty of areas for improvement. I've got two guys that are not performing well despite the coaching and so forth, so I'll be making some changes this year. And I've got three other people that I have on a very distinct improvement process. It's not a traditional HR driven PIP, you know, performance improvement program. I understand what they need, what their gaps are in their performance and their capabilities, and I'm addressing those, and we'll either bring them along or we won't. That individual, I'm like, they're killing it. They know everything they need to know, and they're addressing whatever gaps they have. But it's the person who comes to me and says, hey, we made our number. I go, yeah, but what about these other five? Hey, what do you want from me? You know, I hit my number. Come on. Mm-hmm. That one concerns me a little bit.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Can I pivot really quick?
Sure.
I have an interesting question that I want to ask, which is, so we've been talking about sales leaders. We've been talking about coaching sales leaders. What about coaching this overall, the C-suite? Do you find value in coaching the C-suite relative to revenue acquisition and sales? Meaning ensuring that they have won the training that's necessary to be on the same page as their sales leader, but also that EQ to be on the same page as their sales leader. Do you find value in that, or is that something that you see getting done in market?
Well, not as much as it should, because absolutely, I would say it's critically important. And here's why. 70% of the variance in voluntary turnover is accredited by Gallup's own research to the person you work for, right? And so we lose talent because we have ineffective leaders. Here's what I know about great players. A players want to play for A leaders. They want to play on great teams. They want to be challenged. They want to grow. They want to be developed. And they, you know, they're willing to do what it takes. But if you're an average leader, B minus, C plus leader, you're never going to attract high level talent. You're just not going to do that. Take that up into the C-suite level, and you're managing mid levels, you know, managers that your sales, regional sales managers, et cetera. And you're going to lose some talent, because typically you're not a coach. You're not comfortable giving people credit. You know, you don't create the right cultural norms, all of those kinds of things. So training them to be effective leaders creates a culture where people can thrive and they want to be a part of a great team. And I think that starts at the top, no question about it, and makes it very valuable.
Well, and the reason I asked that question, I spent a lot of time in a previous portion of my life. We would implement sales teams for a lot of organizations. And I personally found that the ones that we were most, and I could probably go back the data and show you, I should have tracked this, but the most tied to and the most was where the CEO would actually embrace the language and embrace the culture and want to know what it meant. He wanted to know what a sales process looked like, wanted to know how, instead of saying, oh, you sales guy, don't take it. And they at least understand the framework enough that they could go, legitimately talk to one of their top, their sales leaders or their sales managers, or even somebody, go talk to a rep and be informed, be on the date. And, but I find that so often pushed, like, I don't need to know that stuff. I don't need to know that stuff. But
yeah,
it never made sense to me.
No, I think that's incredibly short-sighted, because when you have no understanding, and not that you have to be good at it or that you have to have done it, but you have to have a clarity of understanding of the role and the processes and how, funnel generation works and, all the kinds of things that go along with what a sales leader does. If you do not have an appreciation for all that stuff, then you are subject to anything that sales leader tells you. So you miss your number. The sales leader says, hey, look, it's not our fault. It's economy. We did not get to market with a new product. Our marketing support stinks, on and on and on. They make excuses. I wrote a sales book called Quit Whining and Start Selling, because salespeople and sales leaders, we're great with excuses. And when there's a bad economy or a down economy, oh man, we get a pass because it's not our fault. And I don't subscribe to that at all, but the CEO or the general manager who has no awareness of how sales works is subject to just whatever the VP tells him, the sales director, sales leader, whomever that is. And I think that's incredibly problematic for that organization.
Yeah. And I thank you so much for diving into this stuff with us and your opinion on it. I think it's so, so critically necessary, I'm going to take a little weird but direction, but with the advent of AI and all this stuff and people's hands up in the air saying, AI is coming for us all, I think doubling down on the investment that we actually make in the real people and the coaching and the leadership and understanding and knowing what it is, I think we have to up our game even more in that aspect because of the other things that are coming along. I think AI can help in that, but I think it's not a replacement, but I believe it's a double down. And that's one of the reasons we're doing this coaching quarter, and we're going to be doing a lot of things around the people development, because it's so important. Like you said, if you've that unique talent, to drive that unique talent and to find the people that want to be driven to their best, excellence. Yeah. And how you do that. Can we end by doing one thing? And, because we're running out of time here, but if you were going to a sales leader, sales manager, and saying, you mentioned before, you need to have that focused leadership, somebody that is focused on driving the person, on helping the person, on lifting them up. And if you were going to go to them and say, how much time, on average, should a sales manager spend on things like training and coaching? Like, what part of the role is that? And how do you make that time to go from that doer to that coach?
Well, I'll tell you, you really open up a can of worms here. And the reason for that is so many times the sales leader's time is dictated to them by corporate. Corporate says, you got to come to all these meetings. You've got to produce all these reports. You've got to work on budgets. You've got to manage CRM and you've got to track funnels. And, they put all of these activities onto that sales leader that when you strip it all away and you go, okay, that leaves about, 5 hours a week to have any kind of impact on my people. I think you're really cutting your nose off to spite your face. It's untenable, because the sales leader's role, if we define it the way I define it, it is to develop your people, to get things done through them. Sales are created by helping them get better at what they do. There's got to be a fairly significant amount of time invested in that. And God forbid that sales leader also has to manage a territory, Paul. And that's not unusual as well. You got to manage $1 million territory, and I want you to also manage these four other salespeople. Well, the vast majority of my comp is probably coming from my territory. Where do you think I'm spending my time? I mean, come on. right? I'm answering questions. I'm talking on the phone. I'm doing Zoom calls if you're lucky, but I'm really busy developing, you know, my territory. So I think a significant amount of time, and I don't know that I can put a number or a percentage on it just because every scenario is different, but it's significant. If it's not half your time, it's getting pretty close. I mean, that's my job. My job is to develop people. And I think the sooner that executive leadership understands that the more we require those people to develop their people and the more time we give them to do that and the more training and preparation we give them to be good at it, the more it's going to impact our bottom line. My experience is transforming sales teams from mediocre to disproportionate results is something that absolutely can happen with consistency. Most people are not willing to invest the time and the dollars and the energy to how difficult it is to change so many behaviors. I mean, it's just tough.
I think that's great. And I'll add a word to that, which is sales managers, sales leaders fight for that time to be with your people and develop them. If you think that they're the way to go, then, and it's funny, I have to fight for my time. And it's not against corporate or anything like that, but there's this constant pull to do other things, absolutely, right? There's this constant pull, but to fight for that time to invest and enjoy it and to be with, I think is such a big deal.
Absolutely right.
Well, thank you so much, Kelly. This has been awesome. How do people get a hold of you?
You can find my website. It's biz, bizlockerroom.com. Hey, go find me on LinkedIn. Love to have you connect with me there as well. And you can get a glimpse of the other things I do. We have a podcast called Sales Untraining, which we're trying to kind of right the ship when it comes to actual training and coaching and how all that works. But you can certainly find me by Googling Sales Untraining as well.
Sales on Training. I have to give a shout out to that podcast as well. It's a killer podcast. It's great stuff.
Thanks. It's full disclosure.
Full disclosure. I'm self-promoting as well as promoting him. No, it's great stuff. And it's actually one of the reasons we got connected. So I was super pumped about that. And man, you are spot on. I love this time together. You are central part of the country, right? So Yes. Do you work with everywhere around the U.S. or are you limited by geography?
No, all over the country, Canada. I've done a little bit internationally, not a lot, but available where the need might exist.
All right. All right. Well, with that, we're going to close it out for today. Please look up Kelly, bizlockerroom.com. BizLockerRoom.com and Sales on Training. And that is all for today's session of the Art and Science of Complex Sales. Thanks for hanging out with us and keep shining bright. We'll talk to y'all soon.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the Art and Science of Complex Sales. Please take a moment, like, subscribe, share this podcast on all your favorite platforms, and let's get the word out. This podcast is proud to be brought to you by Membrane.com. We are the world's top B2B sales platform. And in the world of B2B sales, with everything from prospecting to business acquisition to managing complex growth, Membrane has the right size technology for your sales team. Our latest innovation, the Coaching Cockpit, empowers your leaders, managers, and team with the information and tools they need to take their skills to the next level and to take advantage of the exponential power of effective sales coaching. With our technology and the top team of sales partners around the world, Membrane is helping to achieve our driving vision. This is, quite simply, elevating the sales profession. To learn more, find us at www.membrane.com. That is membrain.com, or contact us via email at sales@membrane.com. Keep shining bright and have a wonderful day.